Hello, and thank you for joining the Burning Bridges podcast with Mike Spriegel. I'm your host, Mike Spriegel. First thing I just want to get out of the way, I'd like to thank every single person that took the time to listen to the first two podcasts. I appreciate everybody taking the time that did so. It's one of those things that you never know how something like this is going to turn out, and seeing how many people did listen to it definitely was something I felt great about. Did take in some of the feedback, and we're going to always try to work on tweaking the little things to try to help improve the quality what we can, be it with either the sound consistency or also trying to work on just smoothing out some of the format. And that's growing pains. I mean, that's going to be what it's going to be, you know, until we kind of find a way and find that rhythm. But for those of you that are growing with us and listening, as well as I'm doing this, I do appreciate everybody that is taking the time for this. Truth be told, I was kind of hoping to have this episode done about, you know, a few weeks back. I wanted to have this third episode done at least mid-July, and you can't really predict how life goes. Unfortunately, just some various housing crisis issues, just trying to fix and mediate that. And the one thing that you kind of learn out of this is you get a good appreciation for what normal is. See, the problem is that when many people's lives are running normal, most people tend not to be aware of it, and part of it is just because your life is functioning. You know, it's some people like to interject and say that, well, no, my life is never normal. I mean, my boss this past week just said blah, 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 blah. But you know what? That's what bosses do. That's your job, and it's just minor hiccups. Or you have other people like, oh, man, it's been such a busy week. It's my life's not normal. I went out to the bar three times this week. All right, well, maybe you don't go out to the bar normally three times a week, but you also have to consider the fact that it's a minor hiccup, and all of those little things right there, those are active choices in your life. Now, it's when there's a choice that's put upon you that you had no control over whatsoever, and that's kind of what happened to me over the past couple of weeks. Really, really disruptive, and you know, we're at the tail end of it right now here in our household, and I'm kind of glad for the most part, because when your life isn't running normal, you know, it's like having an itch you just can't scratch. Or even if you do, you just scratch it furiously, but it doesn't really offer any relief. All it does is just keeps getting more irritated and just more painful. So it's good to have things finally get back to normal. And, you know, you get an appreciation of the things you do have in your life. I think the true measure of some things is that when some people have, you know, what they consider a crisis, that's really how you've determined how well people are equipped to handle life in general. Like some people, to them, a crisis is, oh my gosh, it was a horrible problem. Somebody just dinged my car and I don't know what to do. There's a dent in it. Well, there's a dent in your car. That's kind of what it is. It's not a crisis. It's all right. My car won't start. It's the only car I have in my household. We have to drive all over the place, and I don't know how to get to point A to point B. I'm going to lose my job. See, those are the things that are true crises and crises. Tell you what, somebody on Facebook, tell me what the proper plural of crisis is. I could Google it, but I'm a little lazy on that right now. But I mean, that's the measure of everything, you know, is how you handle when there is adversity. And I do like to at least thank my wife for being able to grunt through this with me, and we're finally, as I said, getting through this. So, normal. Speaking of normal, and that's probably going to bring us to our theme of this week. One thing I want to talk about, let's talk about the Olympics. So, we're a few days away from the start of the Olympic ceremony for the Summer Olympics. Now, the Olympics are kind of a weird thing nowadays. And the reason I say that is that growing up with the Olympics, there was a lot of more patriotism, I think, back in, let's say, the 80s especially, you know, where you chanting USA and wanting to get all the gold medals or even just any medal, just seeing, you know, your own national pride and how well your country did in the Olympics. That was kind of a thing that was ingrained in us. And, you know, it was still there, I think, a little in the 90s, but it eventually, I think, started to wane away. Now, with the Olympics that are happening this week, it's kind of just a bizarre situation. They're happening over in Rio, and every story coming out of this says it's going to be a complete clown show of an Olympics. I mean, the water that, of course, guess what? All your rowers or some of your swimmers or other people are going to be in four of these events are at still various high pollutant levels, which can cause safety risks. You have buildings that are barely completed and haven't been even tested or ensured that they're going to work for other events. You have accommodations which are maybe almost in the same power level as what you had for the Winter Olympics in Russia, where they're just makeshift, you know, dwellings that people are able to live in. Don't get me wrong, they're still living 20 times better than the actual inhabitants of Rio, to say the least. But you have the police and a lot of government, you know, on almost pure shutdown because of loss of finances. You have a lot of various other just crises, once again, whatever the plural of that is, that's just occurring down there. And, you know, all in all, you kind of feel bad for a lot of the athletes that are going down there because it's kind of what their dreams and goals are. And there's people that train for years just to have an opportunity to represent their country. And this just isn't for the United States as well. It's for almost every other country. There's a lot of people for them. It's not only sometimes a sense of national pride, but for some of them, you know, winning the Olympics almost brings and changes their life, completely, depending on where they come from. But, you know, from the 30 years ago when, you know, I was a kid and watching the Olympics to now, a lot has changed. And I think part of one of the big things that's changed is that the Olympics maybe don't seem as pure as they used to be back in the day. And to elaborate, you know, it was easier to have, I think, a lot of national pride back in the 80s and even through most of the 90s because, for the most part, you didn't know what went on behind the scenes. It's the whole adage about making sausage. As long as you don't see how the sausage is made or knows what goes into it, you just tend to enjoy the sausage. But over the past couple of years, one thing has become the new norm is that just a lot of various politics and seeing how the Olympics are coming about. Case in point, a lot of promises that, you know, Brazil and Rio made to say, hey, we can host the Olympics. We're going to have the water pollution cleaned up. We're going to have the streets cleaned up. And yet we're days away and everything is just as bad as what it was. You know, you have the Winter Olympics in Russia where not only did you have just horrible conditioned, you know, rooms that were built in just, you know, makeshift hotels, but on top of that, you also now have, of course, all the stories coming out about how the Russian government, of course, did an Ocean's 11-like heist to switch out samples to try to hide what the doping and all the other cheating that their athletes were doing. You know, even just other things that you look in the past, such as a lot of the political dissidents that you had, let's say, in the Beijing Summer Olympics years ago. And it's one of those things that now that you can sort of see those strings and everything that's being pulled in order for these Olympics to happen, it kind of loses its luster. And that's kind of how everything is almost nowadays. I mean, it was easier to be ignorant and not aware of these things back in the 80s and most of the 90s. And that was mostly just because there was no internet. There was no way that you could simply just go onto a computer, take a look at something, and determine and figure out, oh, well, what's going on behind the scenes here? Back then, you took everything at a face value. All right, so if the narrative that the TV was to tell you is like, oh, the United States needs to win because we can't let the Russians get all the medals, well, guess what? That's why you're going to cheer for it back then. But if you hear other stories going on in the background, it can be distracting or kind of take away from some of those things. You know, does it make it any less important for an athlete to win a medal in today's day and age? I don't think it's less important, but I think that when you see that, yes, you've worked this hard to get this, but once the Olympics leave this city, the entire city's structure is going to become an entire mess. You know, and if you want an example of that, go on to the internet, just Google like abandoned Olympic sites, and it's an amazing series of pictures of a lot of the things that were constructed for various Olympics that from this point on have been abandoned. Now, sometimes they would go on and say, well, we're going to build this, and after the Olympics are done, we're going to convert it to a mall, but never quite happens. Or, hey, we're going to take this building and turn it into housing. Well, once again, it doesn't happen. And, you know, it's kind of one of those moments you look at and say, well, is it a loss of innocence? Are you looking at this and saying, well, the Olympics are gone, you know, from now we have two more years until, let's say, the Winter Olympics, and we see the next, you know, whatever political stories that tend to be what they are with the Olympics itself, you know. And with my kids, will they watch the Olympics? Probably not. It's not something I would see that would interest them. I could say, hey, I'm going to force you to watch the Olympics. This is going to be an important thing. But once again, that's going to be an interesting thing, watching the Olympics this year. Because if you're NBC, what do you do? I mean, be very clear here. What's the bigger story, the Olympics or all the conditions going on around the Olympics? And I'm sure that NBC will do everything they can to try to focus specifically on just, you know, hey, you know, here's the events and everything. But, you know, it's one of those things to try to hide what else is going on around in that area. It's one of those things you almost want to watch the Olympics and it almost feels like, all right, is something bad going to happen? Like, is there going to be a bunch of rowers that are going to be rowing through the waters and then a body floats up to the surface? Or is there going to be Olympic cycling where they go and basically because of, you know, half-assed measures, unfortunately, there's cracks in the track which cause people to wipe out? You know, it's one of those, you're watching almost the Olympics and it's sad that it almost feels like if I were to watch the Olympics, it would be just to see if something bad does happen. Which really shouldn't be what it is. It should be, hey, here's the perseverance of human spirit, or at least those that didn't use any, of course, steroids or any other doping to, of course, achieve their goals. But, you know, it's one of those things that I don't know how to feel about it. You know, I want to think that, you know, the Olympics make as much sense as they do now as they did 30 years ago, but it's a harder thing to actually really buy into. So that's kind of one of the flashbacks I wanted to focus on for at least this week, is that, you know, with the Olympics, they've come, they've gone, and maybe part of it too is this, is it the loss of the sense of wonder? Now, the Olympics were something to behold back in the 80s. And there was a lot of things, I think, kind of like that. Certain events that were hyped up and said, hey, this is going to be an amazing event. It's going to be a once-in-a-lifetime event. Like, I remember back in 1986 when Halley's Comet was going to be coming around, you know, the closest it's ever been to Earth. And that was one of the biggest stories possible. It was Halley's Comet's coming right now. It's going to be going, and you're not going to see it again for 75 years. So with me, when Halley's Comet came, and I was about 10 years old, there's the outside chance that I could live to, let's say, 85 and see it again. That's not going to happen. But, you know, they made a big deal out of it. I had a Hot Wheels car that had Halley's Comet on it. I mean, I remember classes taking field trips to planetariums just so that way you could just see where Halley's Comet, or at least a, you know, animated scene of what Halley's Comet might be, or a small speck of it as it's just going through the sky. But back then, that was an amazing thing. Now we have satellites that we've put in orbit around various other planets, which is almost just as amazing. We're closer and we are learning more about other planets we ever had the chance to do before. But nobody really cares as much. Like, well, put satellite around a planet, awesome. And maybe part of it is just that as a society, we've become too cool for things. Sometimes it's not easy to sit there and truly geek out about something. It's more popular sometimes to play it kind of just laid back, like, eh, yeah, whatever. Yeah, there's satellites around there. You know, it's maybe just how things compete now for our attention. Putting satellites around a planet, maybe if that was a story 30 years ago, people would just be going nuts about it because it'd be something almost just amazing and unheard of. But now we do that, and it's kind of like a page 7 story in a newspaper that nobody's going to read except people that still get newspapers. Or it'll be one of those small articles on the internet that, you know, even if somebody does read it, it becomes more of an argumentative section where you look at the comments and somehow people manage to find a way to fight in the comments section about, you know, satellites being put around planets. Now, the irony is that there are things that people do geek out about. Like, if you were to sit there and say, hey, did you see the latest episode of Game of Thrones? If somebody's into it, they'll just go nuts and like, oh yeah, it was amazing. Can you believe that so-and-so died and this happened and that happened? It's an amazing sense of wonder for something that is fictional. And I'll never fault anybody about that. I love watching Game of Thrones myself. It's weird that we never get as excited about the real life events that occur in life. Like, hey, did you know we just put a satellite around a planet and we're now getting data, that we've never had before? And everybody's like, well, that's cool. Like, yeah, it is actually cool. We always talk about, oh, well, someday we're going to colonize Mars. We're going to live on another planet. Is it going to happen in our lifetime? It's hard to say. I mean, you like to say, could it happen in 30 years? And to be honest, I don't know. I think the way that the world's going nowadays, I think it'll be harder to do these sort of things by ourselves. I mean that not just in America or Russia or anybody else. I think everybody would have to work together to try to get to that kind of goal. And we don't like each other that much. Truth be told, I mean, if you try talking to us, we're kind of belligerent. But you know what? So are they. So it's kind of what it is at that point. But it has become one of those things. People have become too cool for things. So, one thing, few things that I'll call out right now. And these are anytime I come across things that are amazing things, it's things I want to let you guys know about. So, as I said, one is, have we lost our sense of wonder? If you want to regain that sense of wonder, one thing I'll recommend is see a documentary called Raiders, The Story of the Greatest Fan Film Ever Made. Now, this is something that a lot of people told me about, said it was great, and I actually did go and see it about early July. Came to our town and went. Not only was the documentary, they had a Q&A with one of the makers of the film, and then afterwards they actually showed the film. And what it is this. It's brilliant. It's one of those things that makes me sit there and think, man, did I just waste so much of my childhood just doing absolutely nothing? But it's a story of a couple of 11-year-olds. One of them was named Eric, the other was named Chris. And what they did was, for the next several summers between, when school let out, when it got back in, they did a shot-for-shot refilming of Raiders of the Lost Ark. And it is insane. When you watch this, I mean, you watch the amount of detail that they did. Now, the thing that's interesting is that when you see the full actual movie they made, everything they filmed out of sequence. So there's some sequences where you would see some 11-year-olds, like in the beginning of Raiders, reenacting the beginning of Raiders, but then all of a sudden it jumps to when, let's say, they're 14-year-olds. And then all of a sudden it jumps to when they're 16-year-olds. So they filmed the movie, but they did it at various points in their lives over several summers, and it's downright amazing. I mean, it's one of those things you sit there and you get an idea of what truly is a labor of love to sit there and say that, you know what, we want to do this, we're going to persevere. And they found ways to do the special effects that, quite honestly, you could only do back in the 80s. Back then, it's like, well, what are we going to do for a special effect? Well, what else are we going to do? Let's get some gasoline. But they met another man that was great with effects. They, managed to make, an actual boulder and film that. They actually managed to, try to find different ways, like superimposing, footage upon another to try to make the ghost scene at the end of Raiders when the Ark's actually opened. But it's an first and foremost, the documentary itself sort of explains their overall journey. And what the documentary also follows is that when they did the shot-for-shot filming of it, there was one scene they didn't do, which was the scene where they have the airplane and Indy's fighting the giant mechanic, and it's a struggle to try to beat the mechanic in order to help save Marion, who's, stuck in the airplane itself. So it's also them trying to get the funding 30 years later to try to finish what they started. I mean, these guys were adults. They were trying to find filming, trying to get everything shot within a 2-week period of time to, complete what they started as kids. But you can find this documentary. It's available on, I think, on demand. You can find it on the Google Play Store. You can find it on the iOS Store. I strongly recommend, take the time, watch it, because you'll sit there. and it's a well-done documentary, but you'll sit there and just imagine what the power of passion is and how it can be an inspiring sort of thing. You see how, you know, if I had those resources available to me, or if I even just had the awareness that you could do something like this when I was a kid, I would surely have done it. Part of the reason why I'm doing a podcast right now is just for the, you know, pure sake that, you know what, I have the resources to do this. It's something I want to do. It's something I'm going to enjoy doing. And hopefully I can touch other people by doing this. Now, it's the same thing with them. With them, it was something they loved, they made, they did. And if you have the ability to do so, also find, you can find as well, the completed film that they did. And if you were to play it side by side with Raiders of the Lost Ark on another TV, it does match up almost amazingly well. You can see some things where, you know what, based on the limitations of what they have, you're going to have to use some of your imagination, but it still works off amazingly well. So, you know, kudos to these guys. When I went to the showing in between, they had a Q&A with Eric, who was one of the people that actually, you know, was one of the main actors and makers of the original, you know, film that they did. And, you know, it was a great way to start the month. And the rest of the month, not so much. The rest of the month was kind of a shaky, ugly ordeal. But you know what? You get what you get in the sense that your life is what you make out of it. So I was glad to see this, and hopefully some of you will take the time to watch this as well. Other things, just as a quick shout-out as well. One of my favorite authors is Chuck Klosterman, and I remember reading one of the first books I read of his was back in almost the early 2000s, maybe 2002, I think, which was Sex, Drugs, and Cocoa Puffs. He does a lot of various essays about, you know, social aspects of life itself, and he always has a quirky way of going about it. I've always identified with it and has always been a big fan of his stuff. He had a new book that came out called What If We're Wrong, which posits, you know, what if what we consider to be the truth really isn't the truth, or how truth is subjective based on time itself. He went on the Mark Maron WTF podcast this past week or so, and really, it's the kind of conversations I love when people talk about, you know, the what ifs, or at least hypothesize about the fact that, you know, what we feel is true is always on a sliding scale based on time. Like, as an example, it took, you know, hundreds of years for us to sit there and say slavery's bad. But you know what? 200 years ago, it seemed like a perfectly normal thing. In 200 years now, what are the things that we're going to be talking about as a society that we sit there and think, man, we can't believe that back then we used to think that was okay? Well, that's what that podcast, they kind of touch on that, a couple of things in terms of, you know, my favorite topics like music. I also appreciate the early part of the podcast when Mark Maron's talking about his usage of time. And it's a funny thing because I go through the same thing where he talks about whether or not he watches a TV show as a matter of, you know, if he were to die, is that one of the last things he wants to watch? And he also talks about how, you know, if his wife wants to watch a bad show, pretty much how it's almost a sacrifice of time to do that. But it's one of those podcasts that I definitely, you know, recommend listening to. If it's one of those things that if you aren't into it, it's cool. I'm fine with that itself. But it helps, hopefully gives you a little insight to myself as well. So going on right now about near the end of the podcast at this point. As I've mentioned before, you know, I do appreciate anybody that's taken the time to listen to this. And on top of that, feel free to leave any comments on the Facebook page I have set up for the podcast. It's going to be Burning Bridges on Facebook at Burning Bridges Podcast. We're also on Twitter, which I need to get a little bit more active on that. That's the @BBridgesPod. You know, once again, give me any of your feedback, you know, both good or bad. I'll address it. Some things I'll change, some things I won't change. But altogether, this has been one of those experiences I do find gratifying. I do like doing this, and I appreciate those that do listen. So until next time, trying to plan out what the episode's going to be. If you want to actually give some input onto this, what I'm planning on probably next episode being is talking about old school Nintendo games. What games were the hardest? What were some of my favorite games? I have a guest already possibly lined up to be able to sit there and talk with me. I'd like to try to get this episode out, hopefully that episode out, at least within the next 2 weeks or so as well. So until next time, thank you for joining the Burning Bridges podcast with Mike Spriegel. Thank you.